Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
All right, Rich, what do you think viewers are thinking after 3 weeks on Fox? There are new people watching WWE who haven't been watching regularly before. First week, The Rock, Brock Lesnar winning the title. Second week, a draft. We can make fun of it and whatever. It was awful, but it was a special event. This was the first kind of reality check for what I think SmackDown will be most weeks. Is this a show that you think will hold a lot of those new viewers after we look at the roster they're working with and the way they're presenting and framing the show with a bit of a, I won't call it a facelift, but trying to give it a fresh coat of paint?
Well, I think there's, in the effort to keep the ratings they have now, I don't know how they can serve two masters, because that roster screams great wrestling matches, great stories, great storytelling, but they're presenting it like any year in the last 20 years of Raw. And I don't know on a Friday night if that's going to be an equation that's going to lead to people wanting to spend their time watching it, at least live.
This show was focused on what seems to be their top two of their top baby faces, probably the top two, Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns, and throw Braun Strowman in the mix. So really the top three. And on the heel standpoint, we already see Brock Lesnar as a part-time champion. But we had King Corbin and Shinsuke Nakamura as the top heels, and that's who they're going to have to build around. Does that seem like a good mix and a sustainable star power to carry 2 hours a week on the men's side of things when you take into consideration the strength of Bayley and Sasha and Nikki and Lacey and what they've done with the women's division? Does this post-draft lineup looks like, yeah, that this can work?
I think it does. And I think if anything, if they want to avoid the perils of what they ran into in the summer with Corbin, where they thought they had him and the fans kind of were rejecting him while also seeing him as a viable heel, they may need to lean more into the women, because I think Bayley and Sasha, and on the other side, Nikki and Alexa and even Dana Brooke, did a really good job tonight of showing that they were quality characters and not just pretty faces.
So what did you think? I think probably the most compelling segment was the follow-up to last week's angle with Bayley. What did you think of Bayley a week after? I mean, she turned heel a while ago, but she didn't change all that much. This was a transformative change in her demeanor. She explained herself after some urging from Miz on Miz TV. How's she doing, and does this version of her compare to the one as a heel 2 weeks ago leading into last week? Is this a better, more marketable, more compelling version of a heel Bayley?
I like the version of the heel Bayley they're presenting, but I don't. There's certain things I would disagree a little bit. I think some of the elements of Bayley are there. I had Kate at Make It Loud on Twitter mention that she's still colorful, but she's colorful in her own way as a heel. The jacket, for instance, she wore. The one thing I thought that took away from her, and something you and Bruce talked about for years when she transitioned from NXT, when she was Bayley the face, she was fighting that fight against time to be seen as the younger sister or the girl next door. I mentioned on Twitter, they gave her essentially Moolah makeup for her eyeshadow that made her look far older than she needed to look in HD on 4K.
Yes, I agree with that. How about the decision to have Sasha and Bayley together as a pair? Is that where I had some concern that Sasha being with Bayley would overshadow Bayley a little bit, vice versa, Bayley might overshadow Sasha. Are they together as a duo greater than the sum of their individual parts?
Similar to Shinsuke and Sami Zayn, I say yes, because I believe that for the folks who dig Sasha, and I really like the way Sasha got ahead of all of the misconceptions, not necessarily misconceptions, all of the concerns we would have had going into it by saying, no, we're equals. If you want to insinuate that, Miz, that's a you problem. That's not an us problem. And even that, she didn't go too far and start jumping down his throat, but it was enough to push back forcefully. I even joked, I was waiting for the Miz to get jumped by the both of them, because at that point they had asserted themselves as the alphas in the conversation. And it's amazing to me to see the Miz do a better job than any of the other backstage people interviewing people after situations like this, because I don't know if you've noticed, Wade, but every time there's a turn, he's the person that conducts the interview, not Michael Cole, not Corey Graves, not Caleb Braxton, not even Renee Young.
Interesting observation. Yeah. The women's six-pack challenge match gave us a good visual. Say what you will about multi-person matches, and I've said a lot, but this gave us a good visual about what the depth chart is for the women beyond those top two names who were sitting in the ring on Miz TV. Do you think they got enough to work with? And do you like the mix of talent on the SmackDown side of things who are active right now? Dana Brooke even getting a little mic time to try to reestablish her character as the person who's overlooked and doesn't want to be overlooked anymore.
Yeah, I believe it was, I want to say about 6 to 8 months ago when she had a match on Main Event that kind of stood out because people were noticing. She started bleeding. I believe she got busted open during the match. And people cited how awesome it was to see her fight through it. And since then, she's really started to follow on Twitter. And no matter what she's been doing, she's been trying to climb out of the hole that she had been in for a few months. And I think that was a good opportunity for her. Up until the point they turned it back into the traditional, everyone gets a chance to talk for the three people that they really wanted to spotlight in that case, Nikki Cross, her, and the sassy Southern Belle, Lacey Evans. Fire and Desire not getting a chance to talk. And who was the sixth person? I can't remember right now. Let me check my notes.
Lacey, Nikki, Dana, Sonya, Mandy, Nikki. Carmella. Yeah.
Carmella. Yeah. I was really surprised, especially with her separation from R-Truth, that they didn't give Carmella an opportunity to talk either earlier in the show or even in an inset during the match to highlight why she thinks she would be champion. Looking at them, I made a joke earlier when I was talking to Cam and Travis about it's very clear when you look at the SmackDown women's roster, everyone outside of Bayley and Sasha falls into that that new Roger Ailes movie. Like, they're either super blonde, bombshells, or their Daria Baronato and and Nikki Cross. Like, that's it. That's the differentiation. And obviously they have some people injured, so you can only do so much. But I'm a little nervous, especially with the move to folks who are a lot more comfortable saying yes or nodding to Vince, that they're kind of feeding into his worst stereotype when it comes to the women's makeup. But they're also really talented women wrestlers. It's not like they got bags of sand out there. So it bears watching. I'll say that much.
I very, very much want anyone out there listening who is working on the indie scene to name a tag team the Bags of Sand. I like that. I like that, Rich. I think you've just come up with a new tag team name. The moment that I enjoyed in that match the most is when Carmella and Mandy Rose started going after each other, and Cole said, he told Graves, you must be conflicted. And Graves said, yeah, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. His girlfriend's getting beat up by the woman he lusts after on national television. And it's the greatest thing he's ever seen. So yeah, a little wink and a nod to the audience, I guess.
And he also did that earlier, if you noticed, when the Bayley interview occurred, and he kind of jumped out of character and said, no matter what I say on television, Bayley and I had been cool to this point, and now she's frozen me out.
And give background on that.
Yeah. So that just, I think it's strange to me because typically Corey Graves does a really good job of staying in his role throughout the entirety of the show, with the exception of the Kurt Angle situation. So bringing it back for this bears noting that it was so important to them that Graves is saying to the audience, hey, this isn't just an on-screen thing. She has fully changed, and I don't know who this woman is that I used to ride with, because Carmella and Bayley used to be very close friends, as close, in fact, you know, when you look at Instagram, et cetera, as her and Sasha. So this is a marked change, and they're doing a really good job, in my opinion, of presenting that to the audience.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's set the table, introduce ourselves, and then get the phone calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, following the Friday, October 18th, 2019 edition of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. Drew Gulak called it SmackDown Live. Corey Graves, or I think, called it SmackDown Live, but I think we're supposed to call it Friday Night SmackDown, Rich. But apparently there's some flexibility in that regard, unless those two are getting fined and yelled at right now. But we are covering that. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program. I'm here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights with post shows on Live Wrestling here on the Red Brand, on our Blue Brand, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. We have our flagship, our mailbags, and our interviews. So check that out. Also, search Wade Keller. The most recent Thursday flagship edition that dropped last night features PW Torch VIP analyst Todd Martin joining me for over 2 hours to cover a whole week's worth of big stories, TV shows, headlines, controversies, and more. So check that out. And then earlier this week, Sam Roberts joined me on Interview Tuesday, and we broke down the draft results and looked at the lay of the land for the men's divisions, heel and face, the women's divisions, the take new divisions, and even looked a little ahead towards possibilities now for the WrestleMania top matches for the Universal and WWE titles and also some other secondary or special attraction matches. So we are in that realm of beginning to speculate about WrestleMania. My co-host on today's program is Rich Fan. He is the host of the PW Torch Daily Cast's Saturday show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan, and also the co-host of the PW Torch VIP version of the East Coast Cast. Rich, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thank you, Wade. I love it and looking forward to chatting with everyone we got on the line.
Sounds good. Hey, I'll ask you this at the top of the show instead of later. How can people follow you on social media? I know you're active on social media. Where would you like people to seek you out and follow you?
Yeah, sure. So the three of us share the East Coast Cast Instagram. So if you search East Coast Cast on Instagram, that's where you can find us. We usually tag our names by whatever we put up. On Twitter, very easy. Follow me on Twitter at @Rich_Fan, F-A-N-N. I will never lose that underscore because the gentleman in St. Louis will never give it up for the Rich Fan. It's all right. I'm no longer bitter about it, but a little bit. And then for the show itself, you can always go and search PW Torch East Coast Cast on all the pertinent podcast devices. You can find me on Facebook, but it's just me and my wife and kid, and so that's boring. Don't worry about that. But yeah, I think those would be the best avenues to track me down.
Sounds good. I think the Rich Fan is available, by the way, if you want to get rid of the underscore.
Oh,
and I think you qualify.
I can't do it. I don't think I have that in me. Like it's kind of like giving yourself a nickname. Like if I do the Rich Fan, I've crossed the Rubicon in such a way that I don't think my wife would never let me hear you. I was like, oh, you're the Rich. Oh, I didn't want to get that confused, sir. So
now this is a good time for me to plug my Twitter. It's at the Wade Keller. The Wade Keller, TheWadeKeller. We will now go to phone calls, although I do want to let people know they can email me email the show at WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. Our phone number, if you're not on the phone banks yet but streaming the show, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you are already on the phone banks but haven't pushed one on your phone yet and you want to join the show, you have to push one on your keypad in order to flag yourself as someone who wants to join the conversation. Let's get to calls. We'll begin at 305 and then on deck 443 and 402. 305, you're up first today. Who could this be? State your name and where you're calling from.
Who do you think, Wade? Top here from Miami.
It's the Javier.
Hello,
how
Rich.
You doing, Javier?
Hello.
Hanging in there. I pressed in one later because I wasn't expecting to be first, but but yeah, SmackDown's depressing me.
Huh, okay.
I don't know. It's just all that talent and just it's been very meh. I just don't. I mean, the question I had for you was, do you think that they have enough like talent on the bench, you know, like enough to rotate, because we already had Roman Reigns opening, Roman Reigns and Shinsuke opening and closing the show. And I'm looking at the people who weren't involved. There's Bray Wyatt, who's, you know, special character, Lucha House Party, Apollo Crews, Heath Slater, Brock Lesnar, Ali, who did get a little video. Yeah, and was Elias at all in the show?
Elias, no.
The only time he was in was when they did the Shorty G presentation where they had him talk about short people had no reason to live.
And by the way, people who didn't watch SmackDown but listen to our show, Shorty G is his new name. Chad Gable became Shorty Gable, and now he has christened himself Shorty G. So we need to see if at Rich F is available on Twitter, Rich. All right, go ahead out of here.
Yeah, so those are the people not there. So they're not going to have a rotation. We're basically going to be seeing the same people over and over and over again.
Yes, and that is what I've been talking about. Sam and I talked a little bit about it on Tuesday, too. The last time they did a roster split, within a week, Vince McMahon looked at that and looked at the ratings and realized how sort of incestuous it would be, everybody wrestling everybody. He's already resorting to Roman Reigns wrestling twice, bookending the show, I should say, and Nakamura, too, of course. I don't know how often they're going to have to do that. Now, granted, there were some wrestlers not being utilized, and they had a bunch of women in one match. But to me, the last 3, 4, 5 months since the wild card rule was instituted should have been a time to look ahead towards October and say, we need to make more wrestlers feel important to our viewers. So when we actually do a hard roster split, people care more about wrestlers that right now they don't care about. And I don't know that they've done that. You could say maybe Heavy Machinery, Rich, would be, and The Revival have been built up since then. I'm trying to think of Luke Harper, who wasn't on the show. They've built him up a little bit more. King Corbin got a new gimmick and has been, you know, pushed, continued to be pushed, but it's not exactly new. Shinsuke earlier this year sort of felt like he was MIA. He's gotten a little bit of a boost. Shorty G, clearly a guy who I don't think we would have imagined was a central character 3 months ago. We would not have predicted that for mid-October. I don't know if going through that list of names of people who are maybe in a better position or at least being pushed harder, we can argue whether Shorty G is a better position than Chad Gable, but who are being pushed harder, did they do what they needed to do, Rich, looking specifically at SmackDown, to deepen the bench so that they don't need Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, Miz, and a small circle of people to be leaned on to fill out this 2 hours every week to the point of risking overexposure and repetition?
I think they're towing a dangerous line, and to me, it's the game they're playing right now of the, like you said, the double. This is the stuff they did with Daniel Bryan. This is the stuff they did with Seth Rollins before his knee injury. This is the stuff they did with Roman before he got sick. You're burning the candle at both ends for these wrestlers. And with a 300 person roster, you should be able to, even in your third week, start to establish new people and say, hey, this person's important to pay attention to, without having to resort to having Roman wrestle twice, having Shinsuke wrestle twice. Though I feel like Shinsuke's case, he's been going at like a quarter to half speed for so long, you know, that gets him up to 75%. And, you know, I love Shinsuke, but we gotta be honest about it. I really feel that just saying grappling on television and then quickly every time following up with sports entertainment isn't going to be enough. You need to get out there and show people this is what makes us different. And I don't know if they're going to do that with the people that are in charge, because you have to say no to the boss. And I don't think anyone's willing to do that.
I'm not sure, looking at who got distributed to SmackDown, who would be able to be a top tier, you know, someone in the top tier pool, given the options that they have. I mean, they could have protected Apollo Crews more. They could have not squashed Drew Gulak tonight. They could have tried to revive Heath Slater beyond a backstage comedy guy, you know, making quips and whatever. To me, the one who sticks out the most would be Cesaro, you know, that they could have done a better job protecting him. And I think he'd be top tier material. I think you can argue Elias has been cooled off. So I mean, I don't look at this roster and say, wow, what a bunch of missed opportunities. I kind of look at this and go, they needed to pull from other areas, you know, but boy, with NXT going on USA Network, that's not the time to start pulling from there. And you have a number of competitors out there signing wrestlers to contracts, AEW, you know, most prominently. I mean, they could have done a better job, and I give them some points for what they did with Revival and Roode and Ziggler as a new team and kind of reframing them. And I think featuring Heavy Machinery in the way that people imagine they should be featured if they got called up to the main roster. So they don't get up like an F grade for this, but I also don't – they have 6 tag teams. They have about 8 women. and they have four or five heels and four or five baby faces to work with that are at that level where I think they can expect fans to be interested in what they're doing. It's going to take some finesse, I think, to sustain this. I don't think it's like a lost cause, but no. I don't look at this as an abundance of wrestlers on Fox broadcast television. When one of your top heels is Brock Lesnar and he's around part-time, another one is Bray Wyatt, who is this kind of, you know, whatever, special attraction sideshow act. And then King Corbin, Shinsuke, Elias, Luke Harper, and Cesaro are your top four true full-time heels who have to be the workhorses filling out your time in men's matches on SmackDown. I think that's going to be a challenge. Again, it's not the worst roster, but to go on Fox Broadcast Network with that kind of money and that's the roster they have, this is not an embarrassment of riches, I guess I'll put it that way. Javier, back to you, and then Rich, you can comment too.
Yeah, because you mentioned Drew Gulak, that was the other thing I wanted to, because why give him? They completely ruined him with the whole when 205 first started up. He was, you know, pretty much a joke character. Took a real long time to rehabilitate him, and then they have him come out and he immediately goes to the PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah,
immediately, you know, joking around. Gets killed by Braun Strowman. And I'm fine with them, you know, keeping Braun Strowman strong. But if you're going to squash somebody, how about squash local talent? You know, don't take out one of your bench players. Because, you know, I'm not going to get behind.
And a guy who's been Cruiserweight champion. And now you're like, oh, I bet he would rather go back to 205 Live, where the guys who Braun beats up, you're supposed to care about wrestling each other. I mean, worried's not the word, but I think they did as much damage to the Cruiserweight division and 205 Live's brand at a time when they're incorporating that into their USA Network Wednesday Night Live primetime show. They've diminished that division, but at the same time, they also, as you're saying, Javier, diminished Drew Gulak.
Yeah. So, you know, where in the 205 division, he was not a monster, might be a stretch of the word, but he was a very competent, you know, a great wrestler and great at what he was doing, top of this field when everything's when he's firing, and then all of a sudden he gets killed by this guy. You're right. It's now by everyone else involved with it feels like lesser. And if they're like fighting on the same level as the NXT people, what are you saying about the NXT people? So yeah, I mean that's kind of like, I don't know. It seems like like cutting off your nose to spite your face, kind of, I guess would be the expression. It's like, I don't know. It's short-sighted. It's very short-sighted. I don't know, you know, I'm not saying he needs to be pushed for anything, but at least don't kill him, particularly on the first post-draft show. Show us what he can do, you know?
Yeah.
Chris, what
do you think of what Javier and I have been saying?
So for me, first, with what you were saying about Drew Gulak, 5 years ago when I first started interacting with Sean on Twitter, I was big into Evolve and I was big into Catch Point and his mindset, his being Drew Gulak, that you don't need to show off in the ring. You just need to beat your opponent into submission and be as efficient with that as possible, and pulling in a young Matt Riddle and Jaka and Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson and all these other guys over the years, Timothy Thatcher also adhering of it and doing well with WXW. In fact, cheap plug, if you go on to WXW or Alan Cunahan, Alan 4L here at the Torch, his Twitter feed, he did an interview with Timothy Thatcher after he won the WXW title. And it's a really cool interaction because you can tell they've known each other for a while, and it's a conversation and not a stilted interview with talking points and big scripts and all that silliness. But I say all that to say Drew Gulak, to me, prior to getting to WWE, was a guy I saw as not necessarily a shooter, but a legit dude. He wrestled, him and his younger brother wrestle well. The PowerPoint stuff was, I thought it was a means to an end because they needed to entertain Vince. When Triple H took over 205 Live and his crew, he got back to that serious Catch Point route. And as I mentioned, I think a few weeks ago when I was on with Wade with Raw, my concern was they were going to get back to the old stuff, the lazy stuff. Let's beat up the cruiserweights because they're little guys, and Vince doesn't like little guys. And that's what they did with him. You took all that work, all that stuff that, and if I'm Hunter Hearst Helmsley, if I'm, you know, Paul Levesque, and I'm seeing these guys constantly getting thrown in a wood chipper because they don't fit this size requirement, it has to be very frustrating. And you have to kind of pick your battles, because I don't know about you all, but watching that match, it was very frustrating. It was very like, here we go again. And that, I got that feeling a lot. I mean, I'll get to it, I'm sure, if not through an email, but at some point in a rant later. I have several things to say about how the New Day regressed to a level that I'm ashamed to see on television. And I will also say that Braun could have beaten up local talent. They just did that on Monday.
Yeah.
So I don't get why they couldn't do it here.
Isn't it? I mean, I do want to get to New Day later. When we talk about the assets that SmackDown has to utilize and what they could have from a depth chart standpoint with Kofi Kingston, if they hadn't done what they did with him, or they did what they did with him and then turn that into a way to propel him to some other new chapter of his career, where that loss wasn't something brushed off, but turned out to be a central, almost life-changing moment that they tried to market in some way, instead of him just acting like everything is great and he just was put in his place. So I want to get into that, but Javier, I'll go ahead with any final comments from you.
Yeah, and I did get a good laugh at how we got a in AEW we had that Cody trailer promo, and then we get the same trailer promo for the nickname Shorty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't lost.
Yeah.
I have notes here on my word document.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got a good laugh, but not in a good way. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
People are complaining about this great trailer that some people are complaining about this great trailer that AEW cut for Cody, and then we get the same trailer. WWE uses the same the same thing, but it's for how he got the Shorty nickname. That was just I got a chuckle in a negative way out of that. So
the only thing they did to make it more obvious was to bring, I don't know if Chad Gable's married. But if they have him like, or maybe he's living at home with his mom and she's like giving a list of things to pick up from the grocery store. Don't forget the Metamucil. And then he's just like tuning out. And yeah. Oh,
wow.
My God. Yeah. I got a lot. Yeah.
Well, no, that. Glad you brought that up, Javier. All right, Javier. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time. Okay.
Everybody go VIP. Everybody go VIP. That's an important part.
Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it. You're not required, but thank you. PWTorchVIPinfo.com. All right, we'll go next to 443, and then 508 and 309 are the next two up after that. 443, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hey, Kyle, you're a little muffled. If you can adjust that, that's great. Go ahead and let us know what's on your mind tonight.
Can you hear me now? Am I good?
Yeah, yep. We can always hear you. Just a little scratchy, but.
Okay. So with now with Nikki Cross being number one contender facing Bayley at some point, I was thinking by what would have been Carmella and kind of, and then what they did with Sasha. I just think with those three in particular facing Bayley are for me I could see potentially can be future challenges. But first we'll start with Nikki first. With her getting this now singles push, you think she's gonna like? I think personally she may like thrive on it and then get some momentum because people already like her and she already gets like good reactions, and now Bayley is a heel now. She's gonna be, so I think it's a good mixture for now. And I just think with those three, what do you think of with those three at some point with Sasha possibly at some point breaking up with Bayley and then starting that like feud? Because I just feel like
dare you. No, I don't remember anything else you said because I think you just suggested or wondered
just,
if they're going to break up Bayley
like
and Sasha.
Well, I don't really want them to break up. I'm just glad that Nikki's getting a chance to face Bayley and we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
I just think for like baby faces, to me, I think for baby faces for like there's Nikki, there's Carmella, there's Christina Brooke, and that's great, and they could hype them up. I just think for like like for special, not special, but big enough talent for right now, and seem just we'll see where it goes with the Sasha and Bayley fresh team is again. We'll see how a lot that will go, but with Nikki being a real contender, I think that'll be cool. We'll see and see if she can pull off some good matches.
All right.
And
all right. All right. Yep. So let me jump in. Yep. First of all, I want to say let's please not have any dissension between Bayley and Sasha for at least a year and a half. It was ridiculous the last year or so. How often they did that and undid it. Everyone got numb to it. We don't know what Charlotte stands for or what she's all about. They need to at some point just commit to Sasha and Bayley being together and heels. That's what they've decided on. They need to stick with that. Obviously, long term, year and a half from now, leading into WrestleMania in 2021. That's when I think you should start dropping hints of dissension after having planted some seeds for a few months that were subtle. But please, no, not any sooner than that. Rich, are you with me on that? And then you can talk about Kyle's thoughts on the babyface depth chart challenging Bayley otherwise.
I'm with you on that, but I also think Friday is going to be seeing who plays to the lesser angels of Vince McMahon's psyche, and that sounds like something that seems more like 6 months and not 18 months like we would want. And as it pertains to the faces, I think don't worry about Nikki. It's Alexa and Lacey. Those are going to be the faces. Those are going to eventually be. Now, would I want that? Not necessarily, but given the predilection of the person who signs the checks at the end of the day, it's going to be a pretty blonde woman. And I just don't know if it's the tall one or the short one right now.
And Tamina, I think, on SmackDown, when she comes back healthy, if they want to, you know, cast her that way, there's always call-ups from NXT. There's always trades. There's other opportunities out there to add depth to the challengers for Bayley if she keeps the title for a while. I mean, if I could have a King Corbin Royal Edict, my Royal Edict, not the number one edict, but on my short list for SmackDown, it would be keep Sasha and Bayley together as heels and really establish them for you know, a year plus, a year and 3 months, get us into January 2021, and then assess the situation and decide who you want to turn and under what circumstances. So anyway, I mean, because it'll mean so much more. You know, I mean, you shouldn't be turning people out of the convenience of the moment because you didn't plan ahead enough to build other challengers, or because it's the best, even if it's the best match you can have for Bayley, it shouldn't be a reason to turn Sasha. The match will mean exponentially more if you wait and do other things in the meantime. So
An opportunity too.
It's like cashing your savings bond before it matures. Like let that mature for a while so you get the most out of it.
Speaking of that, I think one of the most important things they can do is, because they maintained, I believe, you both can correct me if I'm wrong, the rule as it pertains to the women's tag team titles that they can jump between all three brands. They mentioned that during the draft. That's a great opportunity at some point to keep the Kabuki Warriors with the title. And if someone remembers, utilize the players to be named later to do a little move around. And maybe if you need to put a heel Asuka or a face Kyrie on SmackDown as an opponent, there you go. You got someone. Or if you want to add in Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Ember Moon, when she recovers from her injury, there are a number of women they can churn in there and have opportunities with. It's just maintaining it and being consistent.
Yep. All right. Kyle, any closing words from you?
Yeah, well, I agree that, you know, I also do agree, you know, Nikki, about Sasha and Bayley being together till for a long time. I do want that. I think it'll be cool. And then we'll see how Nikki Cross does facing Bayley. Is she going to be thriving? We'll just see what happens. But it's going to be a cool feud. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens between the two of them. So that's it. Have a nice night.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Kyle. Yeah, I have to say, when we look back where we were 3-4 months ago, Nikki Cross is a prominent and almost, I think you could say, a beloved figure within the women's division at this point. I think they've done a nice job with her. It seemed like she was destined to be lost in the mix with Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn, you know, just tilting their head at her going, what would anyone see in that? Mm-hmm. And the fans liked her, and the dynamic with her and Alexa turned out to be fun and kind of sweet and compelling, and they rolled with it. Matt McCarthy, ex-creative team member, called it. He's like, this Vince planned to break him up, I'm sure, and he's not going to because of what's happening here. And he was right. And so here we are. And so, again, you know, when we look at where they were pre-wildcard rule and where they are now, there's a few instances where things have gotten better, and Nikki is one of them, and it's valuable to have her at this moment. And it is not an accident that she won that six-pack challenge tonight. She earned a spot like that. Okay, we'll go next to 508, and then after that, 309. 508, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Wade. My name is Dean Mono. I'm from Massachusetts, Swansea.
Excellent. I actually didn't catch your first name. Your phone went out on us a little bit. What's your first name?
Sorry, man. Dave.
Oh, okay. Well, easy. That works. Go ahead, Dave.
It works.
Yep.
So I said two things I wanted to mention real quick. I finally got on this after not being able to go on during the week. Fridays were pretty nice.
Yeah.
One thing. I have biggest thing for me is the Fiend, or kind of the lack thereof. I have two-year-olds at home, and they literally watch the Firefly Funhouse on repeat. They have the first 9 episodes. Like, it's a half hour. They'll watch it for 2 or 3 hours. It's crazy. So my first question I wanted to bring up to you, obviously with all the stuff going on with the Fiend and Seth and them going to SmackDown and just all this stuff, do you think that Bray's acting in the commitment that he has is going to keep him safe? Because watching the last Funhouse, like, when you see he had like maybe 2 lines that I was like, man, this guy is like, he's pouring his heart into it. When he was saying about, like, you know, Seth, please, why are you doing this to me? My kids, were crying, and they were like, no, Seth's bad, Seth's bad. And Seth was pretty much their favorite other than Bray, like the two favorites. And then now they're like, no, Seth's bad, Seth's bad. So I'm like, hey, you kind of took your top baby face and you kind of threw him, you know, I don't know. It's if a 2-year-old kids, if they can see that, and obviously, you know, I heard a lot of callers saying about, you know, Seth Ben. I'm just curious if you think that with Bray's commitment and his acting, do you think that they'd be able to keep him on top, and if they're going to end up doing the double turn or something? I don't know. I just don't know what they could do right now, honestly.
Sure. Yeah, Rich, what do you think? I mean, obviously Bray Wyatt, but I shouldn't say obviously, it's up to you to agree, but I think he's one of the more nuanced actors and performers that they have. I don't think WWE fully anticipated this feud working against Seth because of how popular Bray and The Fiend and the Funhouse segments are. I think everyone's still trying to fully grasp what happened and why, and now what to do from here. But they have something. You know, they definitely have something with Bray Wyatt playing the non-Fiend side of himself, and then obviously The Fiend with all the special effects and the look. So, yeah, just assess where they are, and does Bray Wyatt's acting depth give this character a little more of a Teflon coating, even in the midst of some booking that maybe isn't as sure-footed as we'd like?
I think with Bray, the big issue is going to be him having a 3D mindset for what they might see as a 2D character, because I don't know if you saw any of the stuff they put on Twitter or any other people observed, like, for instance, right before Hell in a Cell, Bray did the press junket with the local news stations and all that stuff. And he did, I want to say, 15 or 20 of them that made it to Twitter. And each one was different. And it wasn't as if when you look on the network, the old school small town, hey, I'm coming to Philly, I'm coming to Port Royal. Yeah, I'm going to get a... He went into the character. He was Bray Wyatt, children's host, and trying to explain to the person, you know, the befuddled newscaster why he doesn't want to fight Seth Rollins. The Fiend wants to fight him, and he doesn't know what's going to happen. And he put so much work into it that Seth Rollins, who has finally found his footing, is running into the worst possible character. Because when you say you want to just burn it down, and he's screaming, why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing there? If I'm a kid, my 7-year-old Trey is afraid of the Fiend, but he likes Bray Wyatt as well. And when he saw Seth Rollins on, Monday, his reaction was, oh, he's the jerk who, you know, I don't like Burn It Down anymore. And he just put his toy in the bin. And that was shocking to me. So I'm in the same boat as you are as far as kids reacting to him that way. They have to figure out, I don't know if Vince sees that, but everyone else is going to start booing, because even on Monday, they were already starting with the Roman style mixed boos. It was 60-40, maybe 70-30. And that's not going to help him. He was already the guy you mentioned that no one wanted to see coming into the DMV. You don't want him to be the person that no one wants to see coming into the children's hospital to take care of.
Right. Yes. Yep. All right. Dave, anything else you want to add?
No, I just had one other observation, I guess you could say, is obviously the Fox deal with the Saudi deal, it's a lot of big money things that WWE's been doing, and that's great financially. But do you think it's going to be one of those things where they're playing to these executives, playing to these Saudi princes, as far as giving them what they want, like these big stars, and then the fans that want to see the Cesaros and the Mustafa Ali's and all these great wrestlers that we love and want to see succeed, do you think that all these, playing to a few rather than playing to the Davos, I think it's going to hurt them in the end?
Rich, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. One of the most fun things I can say regarding this is Ali is one of my favorite wrestlers in the WWE, not only because of his wrestling style, but because of the fact that he really doesn't care what you think about him when he posts things. For instance, when they added him to the collection of brown dudes that are going to be with Terry Bollea, he noted on Twitter, a real American and Hulk Hogan will be coming to Riyadh.
Mm.
And so he knows what's happening. He's not leaning away from it. And he's going to say, no, you're not going to use me as your poster. Yeah. I'm the real American. He's Hulk Hogan. Have fun with that. And so I think with the money, with everything going on with Fox, it's disappointing to me with SmackDown, especially this first post-draft episode, because the more you look at some of the other – I'm not even going to think about AEW. The more you think about New Japan, the more you think about Ring of Honor, Stardom, you know, insert anything, there are starting to become lines in the sand as far as what fans want and what they don't want. And WWE aren't particularly listening to them. They're listening to the person who is beholden to their bottom line. Bruce has mentioned several times on Twitter – and with you as well on the Bruce Mitchell audio show here on the VIP side of things, there is a fiduciary responsibility for the WWE that says sometimes they need to take these deals, and there's also a fiduciary responsibility to point
that,
to the fact
that, by the way, does not exist. I mean, the fiduciary responsibility to take every opportunity you have to take money when it comes your way, that is just not a thing. And somebody wrote a guest editorial when this story broke, just completely dismissing what Bruce had said, and a lot of people just believe to be true. There is not a corporate fiduciary responsibility to strike a deal with Saudi Arabia because there's an amount of money there that stockholders would be upset. That is not a duty. It is a choice, but is absolutely not required as someone running a corporation. And I want to jump in and say that, because I sort of started to believe that must be true, as ridiculous as it might sound, and it's just not.
Oh, no. I was going by, again, with the Seth Rollins, burn it down, fire with fire. If that's what they're going to hide behind as their firewall, this is why we needed to do it, you are losing more money by forcing people to make decisions they wouldn't have. You have a 20-year market share in professional wrestling, and people want AEWs and all these other promotions because they feel like they're not getting it from you. And when you're making this much money, you can make even more money with these people who are running away from your product. You're the one that's making the mistake, and the person at the top of that is the person that should face the most scrutiny for it. Not a guy who just moved from Wyoming or wherever God knows he moved from and stayed in catering. Not the guy who ran ECW and couldn't get people's houses paid because he wouldn't give them money on time. The guy who claims he's a billionaire. The guy who said he was such a visionary in 1999 in Playboy that he thought China could be a world champion regardless of sex because of the fact that she was entertaining. That person 20 years later is scared to death of turning down money because he needs to fund his football team that also failed 10 years ago. And that's just – it's sad. And go ahead.
And it's crazy money. You know, it's just – it's a big pile of money. And then, you know, you look at the other corporations and other businesses doing business over there. And they're like, well, you know, why would we turn this down? If they're doing it, we should do it. And, it, you know, and then they talk themselves into the reason, which is, well, if we're going to make change, we can't isolate them. We need to work with them. Once we get – it's, you know, the argument – and you can make that argument in certain instances, you know, in terms of once you kind of get there's intelligent people I respect who do believe when there are oppressive regimes and American business gets in there, that can lead to positive change. And I understand that's an argument that can be made. The timing for WWE could not have been worse because of the Jamal Khashoggi the slaughter and massacre of Jamal Khashoggi, a U.S.-based citizen, Washington Post columnist, resident and Washington Post columnist, who the CIA concluded the Saudi crown prince ordered to be slaughtered and dismembered. And when you have that, after you shine a spotlight and run this propaganda about how he's allowing women to drive, and, you know, everyone is smiling at the changes he's making, that was what was – they got caught. They took a risk doing business with that regime, and because they have marketed themselves as a company you should love, don't just be entertained by them, but love them for who they are and what they do. That's a big part of what they've done for the past 10 years. That is what led to a lot of fans feeling betrayed or conflicted and upset. And WWE, they played a dangerous game, and the timing could not have ended up worse for them.
Yeah, I remember when I wrote my article on Hulk Hogan, and there were a number of people that complained about it on the Facebook page because they said, you know, Torch, what's your social justice? I was 9 years old. Well, no, I was 11 years old when Sergeant Slaughter joined the Iraqis and turned on Hulk Hogan. And I still had enough sense at that point to realize this doesn't seem right, especially considering we're in the middle of a war. So you fast forward 20 some odd years, and now you're going a step beyond that with this, and you don't think there is hell to pay for it. You don't think there's going to be a brushback. You know, the NBA this week had a situation with LeBron James and everything else. And one of my quickest responses was, I appreciate Daryl Morey's tweet, but he wasn't in China when those questions were asked and the NBA players were. I also thought back to when people interviewed Drew McIntyre in Saudi Arabia about what they were doing that second time they went, and he kept looking off camera. And I was on with you that week, and I noted how weird it was. A guy who's usually confident in everything he says and does could not put words together. And why are you there if that's what the end result of your people are? Because that's also breaking the kayfabe too. If you want to talk about people who are ruining the business, I know some people complained about, you know, to me, ruining the business is putting your staff and your independent contractors in a position where they have to choose their life or the truth.
I will say with WWE, there is no more celebrating of Saudi Arabia, the crown prince, or that regime. I heard, you know, this week a couple mentions of the country Saudi Arabia. Braun Strowman said it, and I think Michael Cole tonight said it. But they aren't drawing a lot of attention to where they're going. I think they know it's they're walking through a dangerous minefield when it comes to how they internally probably feel. I mean, WWE is not – everybody who works for WWE and happens to be in a position of some power or influence in that company don't all walk in lockstep of – money, 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 no matter what. And we don't care who we associate with as long as we can impress some people on Wall Street every 3 months with our numbers. Not everybody feels that way. And I think they're cognizant of that. And I think it's reflected in how they portray it. They want to get their money, but they're out of the business of overtly celebrating and being part of the propaganda machine that money initially seemed to be paying for. And that is probably required of them in order to not face more of a backlash. But it also takes some of the sting out of the initial show when it just did seem so over the top in pushing viewers to think WWE was endorsing the Saudi crown prince and that government, so to speak.
Yeah, and it seems like they're going back to making the same sort of concessions in terms of language they did with that first time around, because if you notice, the Tag Team World Cup to determine the best tag team in the world is – the phrase du jour now for that, whatever that is, the round robin, not even a round robin, the challenge that they've set up. So similar to the match to determine the best wrestler in the world, like, of course this is better than the World Cup. I mean, I know the World Cup is in our competitor's country, but this is our tag team world. Those things I get. You want to make somebody happy, you're at the birthday party, you're going to smile, you're going to nod, you're going to do what you need to do to get the check. But when you have you know, the Team Hogan and Flair stuff, where you said you wouldn't use Hogan and Flair in the United States because you felt they were too old, but because now the action figures need to come off the cabinet and get played with by your sponsor, you're going to break the rules. You know, how far are you going to take this? Are you going to let those two guys wrestle in Saudi Arabia? Are you going to let them get physical if something happens adversely? Oh, how do you handle that? You know, those are going to be really big questions. I'm looking forward to hearing what y'all say when you see it, because I won't, and going from there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're very big on talking about the Tag Team Turmoil match being the biggest and largest in history. Like, it seems like they got the message from Saudi Arabia that Saudi Arabia wants things to be the greatest ever, the largest ever, the biggest ever, the first time ever. That's part of what they're paying for. It almost feels sort of patronizing of WWE towards Saudi Arabia. Like, because we know these things don't matter, but
right,
apparently it does to Saudi Arabia. So they attach these big words to make them feel better about the money they're paying WWE. But WWE, in the big scheme of things, they're not really presenting anything that matters that much to wrestling fans. I mean, we can have a 40-man Royal Rumble once, and that WWE tried to treat that as a big deal. But beyond that, WWE doesn't usually do that because they know that's not what sells. What sells is the personalities, not the statistic of it being more people in a certain match that ultimately doesn't mean all that much than has ever happened before in that style of gimmick match. Let me throw back to Dave and see if he has any follow-up or another topic.
Thanks,
Dave.
Yes,
Dave, you're breaking up on us. I only caught like every third word you just said. I don't know if you can repeat that. Maybe your connection's better. No, don't apologize. It's not your doing, but if you can move around somewhere and
I just want you guys and thank you for
Dave, your phone is breaking up, so drop me an email. We'll get to you in the mailbag. I'd love to hear what you're saying. I just literally can't with our phone connection. So drop me an email and call again. Maybe we'll have a better connection next time. All right, cool. When you hear back, you'll know what we mean, Dave. all right, we'll go to 309 and probably wrap up there. Go ahead, 309, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Mike. I'm from commonmancave.com. I just was calling in today. Had some interesting thoughts, and you guys got me totally.
What city are you from?
Go ahead.
What city are you calling from?
I live down in Dallas now.
Oh, cool.
I live down in Dallas, Texas, but worked with corporate, you know, Fortune 100 companies for the last 30 years, so I've been about everywhere. The thing you guys brought up that I thought was interesting on business is it really depends on what metrics people are looking at. And right now it seems like revenue is the metric that everybody looks at on Wall Street. And I think you brought this up before, Wade, but ratings is a leading indicator that should be telling WWE that there's thunderclouds on the horizon.
Yes.
And they seem to be unwilling to look at that because they have such good revenue streams with their new deals.
I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, when a storm is coming and all the birds start flying away, and then the wind shows up and you're like, all right, I think I sense there's a thunderstorm on its way. The ratings are an indicator of something that is going to impact them down the line. I am not a fan at all of people going, WWE isn't doing anything wrong because look at the revenue. WWE points at the revenue. They boast and brag about their revenue. They also like talking about social media numbers, you know, and how they compare to other things. But what does to me, what matters most are the indicators of, is your fan base happy with the product you're offering? And the stagnation in WWE network subs, as they even expand internationally and offer it to more people. And yes, the number of people willing to watch on television, and people say, well, people are disconnecting and younger people aren't watching TV. Then let's just look at the relative ratings of Raw and SmackDown on their night and how far ahead they are of other programs relative that are also, by the way, on the same cable systems. And that lead that Fox and NBC Universal paid for above other shows on those nights is diminished. So there's a lot
exactly.
of indicators that fans, however you want to look at it, are less happy with the product, or they're just happy but oversaturated. And that could be part of it too. There might be it might not be just pure dissatisfaction that the drop in ratings are indicative of. It could be that third hour of Raw catching up to them and all the other pro wrestling offerings out there, WWE through their network, YouTube, and otherwise. That it just could be a sense of, well, I get to pick and choose what I watch with the 2, 3, 4 hours I have per week. And it's just spreading the icing even thinner on the cake, to the point that it's almost translucent. And so a lot of things are at play, but signing big deals from Saudi Arabia, that's willing to overpay for guaranteed shows, or networks that are desperate for live programming that are considered DVR proof. That is not an indicator or a rebuttal, I guess I should say, of criticism of the product that is causing more people to switch off the show.
No, I totally agree with you. And I think, so I just wanted to throw that in there. Like I said, revenue is more of a lagging indicator, whereas you have your ratings as a leading indicator. And hopefully Vince doesn't just get to overrule everybody in a meeting and try to, you know, sell it differently. But a few things came out for me tonight in the broadcast. The first one was Drew Gulak was really good. I didn't realize how he could be that funny. My biggest concern is that Vince might notice that he's short as he was standing next to Strowman, and hopefully Paul Heyman will remind Vince that he already has a Shorty G on the roster, and he can't make a second one. Because it seems like that's the type of single-mindedness that he is booking with right now. And, you know, like I said, I thought he did a really nice job. But then you look at his overall height, and I keep thinking, well, is this guy just doomed to be spinning his wheels until his contract goes out? And I guess I'm becoming a little bit of a cynical fan in terms of the booking and how Vince looks at guys, boxes them in, and then never changes his mind. That's something you guys are fearing for a guy like Drew?
Rich, what do you think?
I think Drew's going to be in he's in a strange place, because I think he's got a couple of options. One, he can go the Chris Hero route or Cassius Ohno in NXT. And at some point, because he is a great trainer and he is a great technical wrestler, they can ship him down to one of the performance centers, either UK or US or Mexico or wherever they're the moon and wherever they're at the time. And he'll be fine, I think, for his earning, though, because at this point with this landscape, they'd pay to keep him and just let him do that. I mean, look at what's going on with Ohno. Ohno was kind of the gatekeeper in NXT, and then at some point, he's really good at European-style wrestling. They moved him over to NXT UK, and he's fine. He's been thriving over there, and he's also can help train people. I think that's his saving grace. But I also think, yes, I'm really worried that they're going to see a size and they're going to start with the short or little guy things and just completely undercut what could be a really good wrestler. Just like when you think Blake Murphy, he can be a guy. He's no longer the best kept secret because you've drafted him and you put him in a position where you can spotlight him. But if you now just treat him as a smaller muscle guy, you're not helping him either.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing I was thinking tonight was from Raw last week was when Bray started asking Seth not to, you know, why are you doing this? Don't do this. I thought Bray was going back to the split personality, the way he envisions the character. And I'm wondering if Vince got what Bray was doing, and if he did get it, did it make him mad? Because it did really put Seth in a rough position. And if I'm Seth Rollins, this guy has been booked horribly. He's done his own damage to himself on Twitter. And at this point, I wonder how much they have left with that character before they pretty much can just call him Roman Reigns number two. Am I overreacting?
What do you think, Rich?
I really don't think you're overreacting, because Wade is editor publisher of The Torch. And if every day he gets on Twitter and someone has a quibble about maybe something I said or Sean or Bruce, and he ends it with a hashtag Wade Keller is not cool or Pro Wrestling Torch is not cool, that is counterproductive to what you're trying to do. And Seth Rollins, I'm a dad. I get dad jokes, but you can't be, you know, like they always say with the wrestlers, like the Rock and Roll Express, you don't want to show your wedding ring and things like that to kind of give the air of availability. You don't want to go on Twitter and say, well, you know, I'm the top guy in the company, but I'm not cool because you kids don't like what I'm doing out here. And then you proceed to beat up Bray Wyatt, who's screaming, like you said, really into his character. Hey, don't hurt me. What are you doing? Why are you, you know, it makes no sense. Someone should have, his fiance should have shaken him and said, listen, here's how you do Twitter right. And given him a Drew Gulak style 375 PowerPoint of how you don't do what you're currently doing, because that didn't help. Because remember, the thing that set this all off with Seth Rollins isn't cool was he tried to take a shot at Sasha and just lost. It was not even, it was a first round TKO. It was the ref, you know, the ref stopped the match for the safety. And if he had stopped it sooner, maybe Seth wouldn't have the Twitter situation he's in.
And people figure that out pretty quick when somebody is swinging and missing badly on Twitter when they're in a high position and they're aiming down, and that is double bad.
Yeah.
And then I think aiming down
is good. When you end your account. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I think aiming down is good, but the other part I think that is the challenge is that when he's on Twitter, I don't think he's thinking about the fans. I think he's thinking about what Vince is going to think about what he has tweeted in terms of where he sits in the locker room. And I think that's his biggest problem, because he is forgetting that the social media is a platform for the fans and to grow the market share, not to have another area to suck up to Vince. You can do that, you know, when he's sitting in Gorilla all night long.
Yowie wowie indeed.
Well put. Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Yeah. I appreciate it. Any final closing words from you?
Yeah, I got to close one last thing. I was a person who didn't watch much NXT other than the occasional pay-per-view until the weekly show started, and then I've been watching it regularly. And I will tell you that right now, if I had to rank the big wrestling shows, I would put NXT slightly ahead of AEW. And then I got to be honest with you, it's hard for me to even believe that I'm saying this, but I would put NWA Power in third place, SmackDown in fourth, and then in fifth would be Raw. But there's a big gap between three and four. And to be truthful, I kind of just DVR the WWE product, you know, obviously, but it's to the point where it's almost easier to download, because I am a member, but it is almost easier just to download, you know, Wade's broadcast and then do that when I'm driving into work than it is to watch it. And that's a danger zone for any wrestling promotion. And I've got to assume by looking at the numbers that I'm not the only one who feels that way. So that was just kind of my closing remark there.
Rich, anything you want to respond to there?
Yeah, sure. I say congratulations, Wade, for doing the yeoman's work of watching what others won't. You're on that wall. We need you on that wall. They want you on that wall. So thank you for standing at attention. I think you're right. I love Power. I did not think I would enjoy Power as much as I am. And each week they find a new way. I love the Camille non-interview. I love even the awkward Colt. I have never seen Colt Cabana that awkward. But it was like a goofy, affable awkwardness. And then when the guy said, I have a name I'm going to bring up that's a little awkward for you, I was like, that is not the name you want to bring up. It's like, that's not the awkward name. I appreciate you saying this is a name that might make you feel weird, but I get it. But even the wrestling, it doesn't have to be five. And I think that's the one thing that's been really interesting in this whole process of switching the way we watch wrestling weekly. It doesn't have to be the 5-star work rate. It just has to tell you something that makes you want to sit down and watch it for 45 minutes,
right?
Or, you know, 90 to 110 minutes, depending on the show.
Hey, they're close to 500,000 views on YouTube with episode number one, and doing well with episode number two, over 220,000 views at this moment. That's, you know, so far good retention rate, and that number will keep building. So, yeah, I mean, they're onto something, and that is an out for a lot of people. That is an hour that will cut away from an hour that they would have dedicated to Raw or SmackDown. In Mike's case, that's true. Or for that matter, 205 Live or some other WWE Network content. It all is competition. Now, if all the shows are great, people will make more time for more wrestling. But if a show isn't great and people sort of don't have great feelings about it. It can be because of the Saudi Arabia money grab. It could be because there's not enough roster depth, or they think that they're pushing people that they don't like, or the show is too corporate or too scripted or whatever. If those feelings are there and somebody loves professional wrestling in a general sense, and now there's easy to find better options that they enjoy better, of course it's going to start chipping away at WWE. And that's why they're not immune to just because they have all this revenue coming, and they're immune to going out of business. The lights won't be shut off. They won't have to take out the water coolers like they had to do in the 90s. It's not that bad. But in terms of like the next deal and the trend line and tough questions coming at them from media and Wall Street, that stuff will start to show up. And I don't know at what point viewership drops where SmackDown isn't just one time on FS1, but full time on FS1 on Friday nights. But there's obviously a point the viewership could reach and drop to where it would not be feasible to keep it on Fox Broadcast Network indefinitely. So they have to be good. They got to make sure the show's good. All right. We'll wrap up the color portion of the show there. We'll come back with our on-site correspondent who attended in Indianapolis. Boy, did that building look cool. When they went to the wide shot for ring entrances with the stage and that roof lit up, that was a really cool-looking venue. So we'll talk to our on-site correspondent about being in the building, and then we'll answer mailbag questions. If you wanted to join the color portion and didn't, please email WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We got a couple questions on Kofi Kingston, so we'll definitely get into that. But you can add to the mailbag. Rich has some notes also, so we'll make sure that we haven't left any of the notes he took behind in terms of subjects to cover. So everybody stay tuned. On-site correspondent is up first. Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage.